get back to the NFL. Again, Matt George is going to join us coming up in about 20 minutes or so. We saw the Lynx and the Sun advance last night, as expected, in the WNBA playoffs. You could see Diana hated every second of those final minutes of that game. She was not interested in an ovation. She was not interested in any player coming over to her to shake her hand. She fouled out of the game. And the one thing about Diana is when she gets, you could tell she was frustrated. She was frustrated for a large part of that game. And her fouls are telegraphed. You could see them coming a mile away. I'm not saying she fouled out on purpose. I'm saying when Diana gets really pissed off, like she does stuff like that. And I think she saw that that game was going the way that it was going and was just getting increasingly frustrated with the fact that Phoenix couldn't make any headway in that. So when she finally fouls out, the crowd responds. People like, she's like, you could, and shout out to all of those women out there who recognize, yeah, this ain't the time. Diana does not want to shake your hand right now. She does not want to be a part of this. Try to catch her after the game. And she hugged a handful of Lynx and got off the floor. No wave. No. Like, she hasn't announced her retirement.
Right.
She has not announced that she's retiring yet. She's also been very clear. I'm not going to make like any rushed emotional decision. When it's time, I'll tell you. I don't think Diana wants a goodbye tour. She's not, no matter how close she is to Birdie, those are two very, very different personalities. I think Diana would be perfectly fine just going, yeah, that was it. See you guys.
Watching her last night and watching the tweets and, you know, the standing ovation that the Minnesota crowd gave her, I just kept thinking about it, you know. And I know everybody's doing it with good intentions. They're showing respect. You know what I mean? Like, that's really what it is. They're showing love and respect. But I was like, well, what if she feels like people are just trying to retire her? Like, because like you said, she hasn't said she's going to retire. And everybody like, oh, it's thank you for everything. I don't want to retire. Like, if that's in her mind, like, I don't want to retire or I'm not sure what I want to do.
Well, I think she recognizes it for what it is. And I thought Phoenix's marketing of her final game was as brilliant as you could do in a situation like this. The tagline for that final game was, if this is it. That's all it said. If this is it, dot, dot, dot. Meaning if this is Diana's last game, you want to be here for it. We're not saying that it is.
Right.
We're not saying that it isn't. But in case it is, you want to be here for it. And Diana's 42. I think it's a simple, if you're in Minnesota or if you're an announcer or whoever, it's a simple math equation at this point. At some point, we're going to salute her and honor her, and she's going to retire. We don't want to be the crowd that doesn't honor her and she actually retires. If she comes back and we do it again next year,
right.
Great.
Right.
Because we're going to do it again the year after that if she's playing, and the year after that. And if she plays till she's 50, we're going to do it for the next 7 years. We're not going to be the ones who don't do it. And I think that's all that was.
Yeah.
There's probably there's far less opportunities to salute one of the game's greats than there are left available.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's all done, like I said, out of love and respect. But I just kept thinking about that. Like,
it's tough.
If she genuinely isn't sure, and she may want to play, like, man, people trying to retire me. Like, I ain't, like, stop. But I to your point, I think she does understand the heart of what's going on. You know what I mean? Like, it's not no malice. Nobody's trying to say get out of here or nothing like that. They just trying to show respect.
She went through this with Sue. And she stood next to Sue in what wound up being her second to last year, where Birdie had tears rolling down her eyes and in the Key Arena in Seattle, right? The, one more year. And Diana's right next to her doing the hype man thing. And Bird's like, stop, stop. And she gets everybody hyped up. And so she knows what it is.
Yeah.
Like, she knows what it is. No crowd, no cheer. no announcer is going to sway her from her decision. She's either going to play or she's not.
Yeah.
And that's going to be her decision. The Connecticut Sun advanced in a, well,
There's a lot going on.
In a testy Indiana Fever game.
Go ahead.
This is just a, I was with my mom last night, and, you know, she asked about Caitlin, and, you know, my mom was around the league in, you know, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, all the way until the Monarchs folded. Like, my mom was around the league, and she was just like, I can't believe how different this all is. It's just so different than it was, you know, 10, 20 years ago. And I have never seen anything like Caitlin Clark's rookie year. From a positive perspective and a negative perspective, I have never seen a player have this type of impact on the league in both directions. And I saw the tweet from the Sun that had a, it was essentially a graphic that said, anyways, ... That was the picture. And then the actual tweet said, on to the next, with the painting the nails emoji. It's like, okay. And then I saw the engagement it got. I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. Ah, I gotta look. Man, I couldn't. It was, it's like, who are you people? It was, well, no one's watching anymore because Caitlin's gone. It's like, man, who is this? Like, who are these people? And there were thousands of those. Of course, I didn't read all of them. There were thousands of those. Some of them were fans of the Fever. Some of them, I don't even think, were fans of women's basketball. They just jumped in on the Caitlin Clark thing.
Right.
I have never, I don't think I've ever seen a player in any sport elicit this type of negative and positive reaction for the sport they are in like Caitlin Clark did her rookie year. Absolutely incredible in every sense of the word.
Man, there's a lot here. So, first, I'll start with the game itself. Great game. One thing that I really loved about all these playoffs, I guess Phoenix didn't really do it, but the team that was up against it, you know, trying to save their season, man, they fought.
Yeah, they did.
They fought, and Indiana was no different last night.
They did.
They took the Sun to the brink in that game too, and just wasn't able to get it done. But great game. But one of the things that stuck out to me, and I don't know if you caught it, I don't think this happened in the other series. I saw the end of the Aces Storm series, but like every other series that ever happens in basketball, series is over, and the teams, hey, man, that was some good stuff, man. Hey, all love. Like, they don't do that after every game in the series, but when the series is over, it's dap up. That buzzer sounded.
Yep.
It was all Sun players.
Yep.
It was all Fever players.
Yeah.
And when they were done, they just crossed paths and went to their locker rooms, aside from the couple, Dejanay and her girlfriend. But it was like, oh, there's real heat. Like, they don't, for whatever reason, I don't know why it is, they're not feeling each other at all. So that stuck out to me. But I'll go to the positive here. And when you talk about Caitlin's rookie year, unbelievable season from her. Unbelievable rookie season from her. And just in the way she, and I will give her the credit, because I think she's the straw that stirs the drink in Indiana. Kelsey Mitchell is phenomenal. Leah Boston is phenomenal, but Caitlin Clark is the straw that stirs the drink, and she helped spearhead their second half renaissance and push to be a playoff team. And it was just a phenomenal rookie season from Caitlin Clark. Now, the negative. So last night I saw the video with Dejanay and Alyssa Thomas, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. And I think Alyssa was the one doing the talking.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. It was. And they just kind of talked about how, like, this, it's really sickening and getting out of hand with the racism that they have to endure in the stands and on the internet. And they're like, I've been in the league for a long time. I've been around. It's never been like this. This is getting ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And this is probably the fourth or fifth type of video I've seen like this of WNBA players this year, black women this year talking about this. I know Angels talked about it. Mm-hmm. I know, I forgot the young lady's names, but the two other players on the Sky had a press conference the other day where they were breaking down about some of the things they had to endure this year. DeJanay has talked about it individually, mm-hmm. about the racism and everything that she's gone through with comments being made towards her. And then last night again with Alyssa. And it got to the point last night where I tweeted out, I said, yo, at this point, I need Caitlin to come out and say something about this and say something as simple as, look, y'all need to stop. If you support me, if you're a fan of me, cool. But the things that are going on that I hear, I want to say, don't do that. And if you do, you're not a fan of me because I don't support that. She had a video where she was asked about that, I guess, earlier in the day that I hadn't seen. I didn't see till after I made that tweet.
Still haven't seen it.
And she made a statement. She was like, somebody asked her, like, what do you think about all these things? And she was definitive, like, no, that's uncalled for. There's so many great women in this league and that deserve to be respected as such. She said everything that you would want to say, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's on par with who Caitlin's always been. You know what I mean? Like, when I say she needs to say something, it's not because I believe she...
I just want to be very clear. She did say something.
She did say something. On camera, she was asked, she was definitive, she was clear about... She's not cool with any of this, and that needs to stop.
Was that sent to you on Twitter?
No, I actually saw it on my own. Yeah. And then people sent it to me after I made that tweet. But made the tweet.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that video existed.
Okay.
So then I ended up seeing it on my timeline, and then people sent it to me as well. But this is unfair, maybe for Kayla. I feel like one time ain't enough.
That isn't fair, because you said your statement was that she needs to say something, and she did. And I could be wrong. I don't think it's the first. Now, maybe
I would assume it's not. Caitlin is never.
She said something earlier this year on camera. The reason I remember it is because it was so awkward, because it was on a camera phone, and it was like Caitlin was like right here. It's like, hey, I know the sports game is on a bit of a budget. Can we zoom out? Like, what are you doing? Like, did you just have the camera like right there? Like, hey, Caitlin, like, that's why I remember the video so much. And I can't remember specifically if she was asked about this type of behavior. And I think there's also a fine line to walk. I would never, if I'm Caitlin Clark, in a million years, address the internet. When you talk about the stands, though, that's different. Mm-hmm. The WNBA addressed that last night. Mm-hmm. When you talk about what is happening in your arena, yeah, I'm perfectly good with you saying something 1,000 times or 100 times. I would never in a million years address the internet. You don't, this online bullying, I would never touch it. You have no idea who's doing that. Mm-hmm. You don't know if it's a bot, a Fever fan, or just some person who was watching Fox News. Mm-hmm. You have no clue. I wouldn't touch it. That pool is too wide. Mm-hmm. But that's not the only place it's happening.
Right.
When these women are dealing with that in the stands, that's the issue.
It was there last night.
That's the issue that the W has to be better at. That's the issue everybody has to be better at.
It was there last night, and I agree. The W...
Caitlin had somebody thrown out last
night. Yeah, yeah. And she doesn't need anything back towards her. Like,
I've been in that arena before.
Yeah, they was. Did you see the one with the girl who was mocking DeJanay's nails in the stands last night?
I didn't.
With the... And this is the... And I know...
That was on camera?
It was, yeah, it was, somebody took a picture of it.
Oh.
If you go to like Jemele Hill, she, somebody else had put a tweet out about it and Jemele talked about it. That's
one-time friend of D'Lo and Casey. Jemele Hill, we'll find
that's
it.
That's the first person I know who you'd be able to see it from. But like, I know it's unfair to Caitlin, but, and maybe my perspective is one that's different of others, but these women, these black women in this league, they need to be protected in this respect. And I'm sorry. Maybe it's not fair, but if you got to say it 20 times, stop with the racism. Stop with the racist stuff. It's uncalled for. I don't think that's too much of an ask.
I disagree. If you're saying it 20 times, it's not resonating. At some point, someone else has to take care of this.
And I think the WNBA, like the picture that I'm talking about, WNBA security got to get her out of here. She's got to, yeah,
I'm looking for,
she's
right,
got to go. Like ladies like that, and people who do stuff like that, you've got to get out of the arena. You're getting escorted out. When we see you or somebody alerts us to something like that, you got to go.
Her shirt says "Ban Nails." Boy, that looks like a Connecticut Sun crowd if I've ever seen one.
Mm.
Lord.
So, but the whole point is,
Lord,
they got to get control of this. Because it's, you've been around the league a lot, maybe, and you are more familiar with it than me. It seemed excessive, the women in the league who had to address this year and said they went through
all this. Absolutely.
They had to address 100%. The racism and all this other stuff. And they've said themselves, I've never gone through anything like this.
But there's also a certain point where it's not Caitlin's fault.
It's not her fault. It's 100%. It's 100% not her fault.
It's the climate we live in. I mean, the fact that we have an election 2 months away, that's a part of what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, our country right now lives on division.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody out there screaming about, oh, unity, oh, it's this. No, like, bro segregated us in a way that I never thought I would live through.
Mm.
I thought I had just read about that in the books. Of course, they're books I sought out on my own, none that I got in school. But that's a product of what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Caitlin is the face of it, whether she likes it or not. And I don't know that addressing it 20 times is going to do anything for her.
You said something like, whether she likes it or not. Like, that's what it is. And it's not her fault. She didn't ask for this. She's not condoning it. Like I said, she's on wax a number of different times saying, this is not okay. I to a certain degree, she's done all she can do, but it's not stopping, bro. That's my thing. It's not stopping.
But,
and these women.
But that's what I mean. Like, she can't stop it. If she's addressed it,
mm-hmm.
and it hasn't stopped, I don't know what she's supposed to do.
Mm. I don't. So
hi guys, great. Yeah, hey, we got the storm tonight. Hey, stop being racist asses. I'll see you guys after the game.
Maybe, but I do know that these black women needs to stop. Like, that needs to stop. They're going out and they're playing and being disrespected in that way. And I know you agree. I'm not saying you don't agree, but
I'm disagreeing with is I don't even think I'm disagreeing with you. I don't know how Caitlin stops it.
Mm.
I don't know how Caitlin stops it. Like, I'll even give you 4 minutes. Name the person who stopped racism. Find out the answer next on ESPN 1320. I got bad news, man. We did not solve racism during that commercial break. I honestly thought we had it. I thought we were right there, and we in fact weren't. Like, we weren't able to solve racism. I don't know how many. I mean, Dr. King talked 1,000 times and racism didn't go anywhere. I just don't know if Caitlin talks more that racism goes anywhere. I want to be clear. I understand everything you're saying. I just don't think it's fair to put that much of a burden of this society onto her.
Completely understand that.
If she had been radio silent for an entire year, I feel like it's fair to ask a million questions.
And to be fair to her, she
did not.
Yeah, she has
absolutely.
When asked the question,
real quick, did we email Matt? I just realized Matt's not here. We did. Okay.
She answered the question just the way I would personally would like for her to. My my concern, and maybe there, like you said, there is no answer to it. My concern is these black women in this league having to continue to endure this.
I understand.
That's also not fair. We talk about what's fair, not fair to Caitlin. It's not fair that these black women in this league have to endure that. And I'm not saying that you or anybody else is saying it is. I'm just saying that's probably where my focus is more than what's fair to Caitlin. Just being honest.
I got you. I don't. Yeah. All right. Let's just bring in Matt, because if anyone can solve racism, it's Matt George. Matt, boy, the task what? On you today, buddy, is high. Did you get a new camera? It seems extremely close to your face today.
It is zoomed, and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
So allow me to figure that out.
No, we could see radio. every detail of. It looked like the Caitlin video I was talking about earlier, where the camera was just uncomfortably close to her face. So Matt's gonna solve racism for us in 4K. He is a true talking head here at this moment.
I don't know.
He's on that wind horse.
He's on that Brian. Oh, there he is. There he is. There he is. It looks like you've got your sell the team shirt on.
No, just my Oakland jersey.
Oh, there you go. Okay, with a blazer.
Throw the blazer over it.
Class it up. Yep. Class it up. I like it.
Got to be a little bit professional.
I like it. Looking good. Appreciate you joining us a couple of hours early. Obviously, the two of you have business to attend to later on today. Do want to make quick mention. Deebo Samuel was on the field at practice today.
Well, that's good. That's good.
I don't know what that means. Yeah. I'm just the portion that media was available for. Deebo was out there, so
okay.
Do with that what you will. As we welcome in our good friend Matt George here, host of the Locked On Kings podcast, and of course, fantastic reporter over at ABC 10. We are just days away from the start of training camp, Matt. Of course, media day is on Monday. The first practice is on Tuesday. When you arrive Tuesday, what do you think your first question is going to be for Mike Brown?
I have so many questions. The one that's on the top of my mind is, who's your starting shooting guard?
Going to go great. Please ask him that.
I'm sure Mike is going to be happy to answer that question. I mean, the actions are going to speak louder than words with that one. Like, who starts the first preseason game? If we get any opportunity to see scrimmages and things like that, because typically in training camp, you'll see four different teams. You'll see typically the starting five where – usually last year it was black, so they wore the black jerseys, the starting five. Then the bench five wore gray, and then you had the kind of third string wear blue, and then red was the guys that are probably two-way guys slash most likely going to be spending time in the G League. So that'll give us a kind of a good indication of at least who he's looking at initially and who's in that starting five. Gut feeling says it's going to be Keon Ellis. So that's what I'm most curious about too. I want to know what implementing DeMar DeRozan looks like, because I'm of the belief that you're not changing what you do for DeMar. The expectation is for DeMar to come in and fit with what you do. So the Kings will definitely have to incorporate him. And I know DeMontis Sabonis made comments about at his basketball camp earlier this offseason, made comments about, like, we have to learn how to play around DeMar. And I agree with that to some extent, especially coming from a guy like Domas, whose number one goal is to get everybody involved and try and get them the ball where they like the ball. That being said, with the DHO heavy focused offense that the Sacramento Kings have, DeMar should effortlessly slot into that. And I don't expect anybody, the wheel to be reinvented on the offensive end and for things to change for DeMar to feel comfortable, right? Again, it's on DeMar to come to this team and fit with what this Kings team does offensively, because we know offensively this team is already very, very good. So I guess kind of just seeing what's different about how the Kings run their offense featuring DeMar and what's the same.
We talked about this yesterday about, like, what that offense numbers wise, what that might look like, right? Like, I think somebody asked, Jesse or Damon, what do I think DeMar is going to average? And I think he'll be around 18, 19, 20 points per game. De'Aaron's average, I don't think, will dip that much. I think it'll still be around 25 or so. And I get to Sabonis, and I wonder, my initial thought is his numbers might dip a little bit. But it feels like Domantas Sabonis gets the numbers that he gets basically like off of the scraps or just the flow of the offense. Like he's not a ISO player. It's not, oh, get him his look at the elbow so he can go to work. And then that's how he gets 8 points a game. He gets them off, you know, giving goals, off pick and rolls, offensive rebounds, things of that nature. Is it realistic in your opinion to think that DeMar DeRozan can come into this offense and everyone stays around the same average-wise points per game?
If the Sacramento Kings are averaging 130 plus points per game, then yeah, like and maybe they could maybe they could go back up to that ridiculously high scoring totals every game to where everybody gets theirs. I think naturally, like there's only one ball and you have a bunch of guys that can do a lot with it, which is never a bad problem to have, right? Mm-hmm. It's a good problem for Coach Brown to deal with, and it just makes the Kings multifaceted, and they're a four or five headed monster, and even some guys coming off the bench, six headed monster at times offensively, to where you have to kind of pick your poison, which I think is going to be a primary strength of this Kings offense this season. That being said, right, you have to share the rock a little bit, and I do expect some numbers to dip. I don't expect DeMar DeRozan to be a 24-point-per-game scorer. I don't. I think there's a good chance that De'Aaron Fox's scoring totals might go up, and I say that because of his motivations. I think I know Fox wants to win, and I think the more Fox scores, the more likely the Kings are to win, number one. And number two is, like we've discussed before, I think De'Aaron Fox scores more points. That puts him in the better running to make All-NBA, which makes him eligible for the Supermax contract, which we know Fox and his agent, Rich Paul, and all that, that's what they're interested in. So I think there's a good chance that Fox's numbers scoring-wise do go up. I think Domantas Sabonis' scoring numbers might go down because I don't expect the Kings. They never really draw up anything specifically for Sabonis anyway, even though he touches the ball and is involved in pretty much all of their sets. They don't draw anything up for him. And Mike Brown anyway has a very read and react style offense, right? His 0.5 rule or 0.5 is a pillar of his offense, which is in half a second, 0.5 seconds. You make a decision whether to shoot, drive, or pass the ball. Like that is Mike's belief. And he lets this team run a very free flowing DHO make decisions on the fly style of offense. So I expect that to feed some guys on some nights and go away from other guys on some nights. I expect the numbers to drop, but not in a way that's concerning, in a way that suggests this is just a all around really, really good basketball team.
Technically as well, like when we talk about numbers, it's not as seamless as this, but nobody's numbers have to dip. Because what DeMar might do is just take on the 22 points per game that Harrison and Herter combined for.
Mm.
And that I mean, maybe it's not 22. And I don't think
Herter's still on.
Yeah, I don't think Herter will go to zero. But
well, we have some games on our list that
I don't think he'll go to zero. But maybe he averaged 10 last year. Maybe he's a 6 point per game scorer this year off the bench or something like
that. Oh, man, I don't like that at all.
Well, I don't think he's going to average 10.
Herter?
Yeah, I don't think he'll average 10.
Okay.
I think he might be close.
What is he doing if he's not averaging 10 points, though? That's the problem. Like, what is Herter giving
like,
you if he's not
Do you
scoring?
See him, like, at 15 minutes a game or something? Or
no,
less?
But think about it. Like, I'm looking at the averages right now. Trey Lyles averaged 7 points per game last year. And we think Trey Lyles was really good off the bench. Like, he did his job. Sometimes he'd have these games where he had 18. And others, he had three, you know what I mean? Because he's a bench player, and that's what happens. Mm-hmm. If that's the nature of Kevin Herter's season, based off the minutes he might get, I don't. If Kevin Herter averaged 8 points per game, I don't think that necessarily means he had a bad season. If he's a bench player. Like, he's supposed to be a bench player for you. That's the way I'm looking at him.
I got you. Matt, thoughts?
I guess shooting percentage is also extremely important, too, because if he's averaging 8 or 9 points per game, but shooting 38%+ from three, meaning when he's getting his looks, he's cashing in on them, then I guess that's acceptable because that just means his volume is going down because of the players that he's playing with and the minutes that he's getting. But if Kevin Herter is a 34-35% three-point shooter and averaging 8 points per game, that's when you're questioning, like, what is the purpose of having this guy on the floor? And I don't mean that in a, like, hostile or aggressive way, but, like, Kevin, if Kevin Herter's not scoring and shooting threes, what is he giving you? Maybe a little bit of passing. I think he's a slightly underrated passer. Doesn't really rebound the basketball. All we know, he struggles on the defensive end. So Kevin Herter's purpose on this Kings team, at least from what I understand, and this could be selling him short, but this is just what I've seen over the last couple seasons. Kevin Herter's purpose on this Kings team is to space the floor and knock down threes. Mm-hmm. If he's not doing that, I think Mike Brown will have a quick hook for him. And maybe that's to your point, Casey. Maybe if there are games where Herter, whether he's starting or coming off the bench, he starts the game 0-3 from three-point range, maybe Mike only plays him 10 minutes that night because somebody else is rolling. Keon's playing well. You got to get more minutes to Malik Monk, who only averaged 26 minutes a game last season, which I have to remind myself of that and go, how in the world is Malik Monk not only playing 26 minutes per game? He needs to be playing more regardless of if he's starting or not. So Herter might have the quick hook if he's not playing well, and that might lead to his ultimate averages dropping.
He's a different player than this guy, and he's probably a better player than this guy. But I just randomly went to Minnesota, and I look at Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Everybody's like, he's a good little bench player, average 8 points a game. Like, he's a good. That's
how many minutes per game did he play?
He played 23 minutes a night.
Well, strangely enough, Kevin averaged 24 last year.
That might go
which is a career low. By the way, he averaged 29 the year prior, the only year where he started every game in a season that he played. And 29, 30, 31, 27, none of those games. He's always consistently been a starter. Mm-hmm. But there are, like, looking at his last year in Atlanta, he played 64 games. He started 60 of them, so that means he came off the bench for 14 of them. Mm-hmm. He's still primarily been a starter. I'm very anxious to see if Mike makes the move to make him an 82 game bench player
and
role player.
Another guy I'm looking at, like Andrew Nimhart for the Pacers, mm-hmm. good ball player. He averaged 9 points a game, off the bench 25 minutes a night. Like I just don't. It could go bad. It could be all bad. Like if he's only averaging
Kevin last year, he averaged 25 minutes a game and 10 points per game.
Yeah, because he was a start. The expectations of being your starting two guard and doing that and coming off the bench, I think play a factor and reasonably so. Like if you're getting that production off the bench and now you've got a guy in DeMar DeRozan who's averaging close to 20.
All right. I got it. Matt, just ask Mike if he hates Kevin. That's the first question. That's the first question on Tuesday. Do you hate Kevin Herter?
I will kiss my career goodbye. No, I think Kevin Herter too is one of those guys where when he's on though, you're gonna have a hard time taking him off the mm-hmm. floor mm-hmm. because he's so valuable and so lethal as a shooter to where when he catches fire, right, it's like he can take over a game as we've seen in the past. But also his presence on the floor alone is if you can make a defense hesitate for a second to help on Fox
right.
or to help on DeRozan. Because Kevin Herter is out there, then he's a valuable asset. If he's on the floor, like I was thinking, okay, if Kevin Herter averaged 20 minutes a game and only 8 points, I'm thinking, oh God, that doesn't feel good. That doesn't sound like he's been very efficient. What else is he doing? But unlike maybe Harrison Barnes, Kevin Herter being out there has a chance to impact how the defense plays the other four guys out there with him because you constantly have to be worried or concerned about where Kevin Herter is on the perimeter. Now, that's what I'm saying, though. If defenses sag off of Kevin and say, okay, we'll dare Kevin Herter to beat us, right? We're not leaving Fox. We're not leaving DeRozan. Dare Kevin Herter to beat us. And he gets three wide open threes in the first 10 minutes that he plays and bricks them. Then that's where Mike seriously has to look at his bench and look at his players and look at his rotations and go, it might be more worth it for me to go in a more defensive direction or just give more minutes to my top guys. I think it's definitely matchup based. But if Herter is on and when Herter is on the floor, he does have an impact outside of just scoring with how he changes how defenses cover the Kings. But there are also going to be a handful of games, if not very regularly to start, where teams are daring Herter to beat them while also attacking Herter relentlessly on defense, which is what teams did all last season. And Kevin unfortunately just couldn't keep up.
All right, Kevin. So that's a no to asking Mike the question, just to be clear. All right, that's fine. That's fine. Obviously, so much of the, I mean, the first game is what, the ninth at the Golden One Center against the Golden State Warriors? I think it's October 9th. But anyways, point being, it's not far away. Mm-hmm. And I think the number one thing everybody is watching is that two-guard position. You said you think Keon Ellis is starting, but you said it with a certain tone in your voice. Is that because you are adamant it should be Malik Monk?
I mean, it's the hill I'll die on. I just believe Malik Monk is he was a top three player on your roster last season. At worst, he's top four to start this season with DeMar DeRozan coming in. Maybe Keegan will pass him and he'll become top five. But he's one of your best players, period. Like, and one of your most important players. You guys were breaking down, I think, last week. If you look at some of the best games of the season, best performances of the season, Malik Monk is at the center of them.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Malik Monk.
We got another one.
Monk goes down at the end of last season. We saw how the season ended. Now, it's not all because Malik went down, but that certainly played a pretty significant factor in it. Malik is very much a vital artery to the Sacramento Kings, if there's a good medical way to put it. Mm-hmm. Now, he can still be that vital artery coming off the bench, which is what I expect will be the case. I think where Mike Brown's stubbornness comes into play is like when somebody got hurt and then Keon got the opportunity, or Duarte got the opportunity ahead of Malik Monk. Now, Keon ended up working out, but I guess I kind of get that if you really, truly believe that like Malik needs to be with our second unit will not survive without Malik leading it. Where I don't subscribe to Mike Brown's way of thinking, and truth be told, this is the honest to God biggest criticism I have of Mike Brown last season, and I already brought it up. 26 minutes a game for Malik Monk is unacceptable. Like, he has to be playing more than that. Unless, if Malik Monk starts playing 30 minutes a game, but the extra 4 minutes he looks tired, or he looks ineffective, or whatever the case, then okay, maybe you start to knock him down a little bit. But someone explain to me why having Malik Monk on the floor more for the Sacramento Kings is a bad thing. Explain that to me. So whether Malik is starting or coming off the bench, he needs to be playing close to 30 minutes a night. He needs to be. Maybe even over 30 minutes a night sometimes, because that's how important he is. And if the reason for him not getting those minutes is because of your rotations, not how well he plays, then you have a problem, because your rotations are taking priority over the best thing for your team, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So I am of the belief that start Malik Monk, or at the very least play him starter level minutes or consistent starter level minutes. If it's Keon Ellis, that's what I expect. I completely understand. Guys, I also wouldn't be shocked too if the first preseason game Kevin Huerter is starting. One last look. Or let's see what it is, because Kevin hasn't played basketball for a while. But hey, Kevin, it was your spot before you went down. I know we experimented with Duarte a little bit. That was a failure. We apologize about that. That was your spot. So here it is again. Prove that you can still hold on to it. That wouldn't shock me at all. I still think Keon is the favorite to be the two.
I'm not sure the timing works out for that. Matt might know better. Yeah, because I think he gets fully cleared sometime. Maybe the second week of camp, mm-hmm. which is when that game would be played. Mm-hmm. So he's cleared. Kevin, you're starting. I'm actually all for it.
And that might kill him. Like, if he can't go, though, and Keon starts, and then Keon balls out.
100%.
Sorry, Kevin.
Yep.
Sorry.
100%.
Keon comes in right away, and we get a small look at the new starting lineup featuring DeMar DeRozan, and Keon is locking up Steph Curry that game. Or is doing his best job on Steph Curry, or makes Buddy Hield's life a living hell. Kevin, don't matter what you're doing, Buddy. Like, it's too little too late, man. Your spot's gone. But if he's ready to go, it would not shock me at all if Mike says, all right, Kevin, this has been your spot. Prove that you can hold on to it.
The thing that I worry about with Kevin Huerter starting, and I understand the argument for it, is it feels like you got two better options for the way this roster is out. So, like, my thought would be, like, why are we messing around? Like, you got two better options. Even if you don't think Malik Monk should be the starter, that's fine. I understand that. The guy that fits better is Keon Ellis as the starter at the two. Does it make sense? Like, it just feels like we're just kind of – pacifying, they would be pacifying Kevin Huerter when you got two better options that you'll probably eventually get to at some point.
Go ahead.
I think there's an element of the unknown to it that plays a factor too, KC. And what I mean by that is, one, when all three of them are on, like Kevin Hurt is the best shooter out of the three, pure shooter. And if you're looking for floor spacing and shooting, and you could say you are going to get the best shooting out of any of those three guys, it's Kevin Hurt you want. Like he's shown to be the best three-point shooter out of that group. There's the risk with Keon Ellis of defenses are going to dare him to beat them. And if Keon Ellis is shooting 34% from three-point range or something like that, you might seriously have to consider, like, the spacing is not working, or this is a concern. Keon's not hitting at a high enough.
Uh-oh.
Well, that's an official.
We got a Matt that's George freeze. We've got, and Matt's still talking. I have zero doubt that Matt is still talking right now.
Am I back?
No, he's back. He's back. He's back.
Nothing changed for me. Yeah. You guys just started looking out the window, talking to somebody else. I was like, okay, well, I'll just keep going.
Well, to be clear, there's money outside the window, so forgive us. Every once in a while, what's happening outside the window takes priority. Yeah, unbelievable. Okay. What the hell? What are you at James Ham's house right now, Matt? Matt has never once frozen in the history of this show. Now we get him on at 1 o'clock, and look at that freeze. That's just terrible. That's just awful. That's going to be circulating the internet in about 10 seconds. You look great, Matt.
Screenshots are cold.
I need
man.
You to confirm that you are
the
not.
Screenshots are cold.
I need you to confirm you're not at James Ham's house right now.
I can confirm I'm not at Ham's house. Right. I can't confirm that John Fisher's not messing with my internet or something.
See, John Fisher might be, or Artie's, you know, playing video games right now. He's streaming against somebody. It's very possible. The idea of, I think we talked about this when the press release went out for Sacramento Kings forward, Kevin Huerter, that, man, if they're in a position to where Keon or Malik, or Keon and Malik start prior to Kevin being able to get to 5-on-5, he's probably going to be at a bit of a disadvantage. I mean, you got two games against the Warriors, you know, and those games are every other day, as we outlined earlier this week. Those preseason games are every other day once they start on that Wednesday or Thursday or whatever it is. They're every other day until they're over, and then we got a week till the season starts.
Right.
So not that Kevin can't get into a couple of them. It's just, it's different. Mm-hmm. It's going to be different. Well, Matt, you got business to attend to, Matt. So we gotta let you go. But I just assumed we weren't going to get to see you today. So I appreciate you texting me last night and making some extra time for us. Matt George, Locked On Kings podcast, of course, his great work over at ABC 10. Got to ask every week, regardless of what time, where are we at this weekend, this Friday?
Game of the week. It's a big one. Wheatland 4-0 versus Lincoln 4-0. The Lincoln Fighting Zebras were 1-9 last season and started the season 0-4, and in one off season have completely turned it around. And Wheatland hasn't won more than three games in their last like two or three seasons, and they're 4-0 to start too. So a really kind of cool redemption story for both these teams, but it'll be at Lincoln High School.
Okay. Good stuff, Matt. Okay. We appreciate you. We'll come back with more of Stilo and KC here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
We're begging for flags now.
I need Draymond.
Well, Caraway
over here.
Hey, it read a little different at first. I was like, whoa. And then he paused it, and I was like, well.
All right, James Harden.
He saw the same thing. The guy literally said, I just fouled him.
I don't know what he was doing either.
You're flopping like Dejanay did on that play last night we were watching.
He said, I fouled him.
All right. Like, Stephen Brown's like that kid in the commercial or whatever. Coach, I fouled him. It's their ball.
No, it was out on me, coach. I touched it last.
Yeah, that guy sucked.
What's the referee do in that regard? Like, oh, you did? Well, I'll be damned.
Keep it to yourself, snitch.
Yeah. What you saying? I don't know what I'm doing? Get away from me.
Go tell his coach. Like, yo, you know what your player just told me?
I need to know who greenlit that commercial.
Yeah, don't ever be that teammate, by the way.
What marketing campaign was like, I got it. This will do it. I want to talk about the Vince McMahon doc with you so bad. You're not. I'm a little further into it. We're going to talk about it today, but as I said, Casey got to leave in about an hour, so I got some thoughts, and they're not good. I know a lot of people have already finished it. All six episodes were posted.
Each episode is an hour?
It looks like it. Yeah, it looks. Is it certainly? I know the first episode was. I think the second episode is. This is. We'll talk about it.
Well, I mean, I don't feel like I need to watch it. Do you think I need to watch it before you tell me about, like,
pal? I need content, bro.
You want to talk about it? I thought you wanted.
I need content. That's why I wrote it there, because if we talked NFL overreactions and you're not here, the whole thing wouldn't make any sense. We've hit Thursday. We haven't done overreactions yet. That means week three overreactions have now turned into NFL overreaction.
Are we going? If we wait till tomorrow, it's just reactions.
Yeah, because week four gets underway tonight, and the Dallas Cowboys will take the football field against the New York Giants. So I'll ask you this one, and I think I know the answer from everybody. The Cowboys' defense will cost them a playoff spot.
Not an overreaction.
Because?
Their whole damn team is going
to
cost them.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, the whole team, yeah. It's an overreaction for you to think it's just going to be one unit, I guess.
Oh, man. That's what I was hoping for with that one. How about this one?
Cowboys defense, their running backs, wide receivers, their coaches, Jerry Jones.
Yeah,
they'll keep them out of the playoffs.
I don't think they're an awful team. I just think they're kind of average across the board. Now, offensively, I think they'll put up numbers. Dak will have his numbers, CeeDee will have his numbers, and they'll have games where, you know, they score 30 some points or something like that, because they have two explosive players when you talk about Dak and CeeDee Lamb. But I think the whole team across the board is just kind of an average squad, except for maybe the kicker. Their kicker got a leg.
Yeah, he's a robot.
Yeah, he's the truth. So
is today, because the Giants are already done, but is today the Cowboys lose their Leaf Town match?
Oh, yeah, this is a big problem for the Dallas Cowboys if they lose, because they didn't handle a loss to Baltimore where they had a pretty stunning final 8 minutes with a legit chance to win. Mm-hmm. They didn't handle that well.
Yeah.
And I think they all knew. I told you, I was like, man, what do we make of that final 8 minutes? I didn't ask that question for longer than an hour. As soon as I saw Micah at the locker, I was like, oh, they know that was garbage. Mm. They know that final 8 minutes of the Cowboys Ravens game was a lot more about the Ravens than it was about the Cowboys.
Stats back that up too.
Yeah.
So let me there's on the fly overreaction. Are the Giants a little better than we're giving them credit for? They're not good. They're not a good team. But we're I think right now, like in this moment, we talk about the Giants like they were the Panthers 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
They had a last-second loss to Washington, who we think is a decent team. And then they go
coming
and
beat, into being a decent team.
Yeah, then they go and beat Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. Who stinks. Cleveland sucks. Jesse was right. Jesse's been right all along. Which makes this week's conversation terribly uncomfortable.
If we look at the, like, we have been looking at the Giants like a F team, giving them a grade.
Yeah.
Are they more of a D? Maybe.
Well, that's
C-.
Not an overreaction. It's just a simple question, and
it's an overreaction to say that they're better than we thought.
No, I don't think that they're good.
Yeah, they're bad.
I don't think we're underestimating. I don't think that's a good football team.
Daniel Jones isn't great. Devin Singletary is their starting running back. Malik Nabers is awesome, but
do you think they're closer to
who's awesome?
Malik Nabers, their first round pick.
Yeah.
Do you think they're? I says, do you think they're closer to the Cowboys than we maybe give them credit for? Like, because we're looking at this like Cowboys, well, you have to beat the Giants. Maybe they're like around the same type of team.
No, I do not think that.
They both beat the Browns.
Again.
I'm just saying.
What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? Jesse was right.
The Browns are awful.
I was wrong, and I hate the conversation this week for the Raiders.
I've never talked trash about Cleveland. I've only told the truth.
Oh, damn.
Well, no, you have a weird vendetta against the city, too.
What do you mean?
Well, like, it appears you have a weird vendetta.
People get mad at me for saying, yeah, the Cavaliers really have done nothing since they got Donovan Mitchell, which is true.
Well, it's not wrong.
Well, that's...
I mean, they haven't won a championship. They're
Yeah, they made the
fine basketball team.
Well, yeah, but they've never like made the next move to like.
Really, they made the second round of the playoffs too. On top of that, and since they got Donovan Mitchell, I think that was the first time since how do I put it? First time a LeBron-less Cavs team made the playoffs in like 20 tries.
Are you trying to make my case? I guess
they did something.
Yeah, but like they never built off of it.
Yeah, what they do next will certainly be interesting.
It's not me, it's you, Cleveland.
Either way, Jesse is leaving on that midnight train to Georgia.
He's going
to
leave Cleveland in a brown pickup.
He ain't never going to be in Cleveland. If Jesse lands up in Cleveland, something went terribly
wrong. I'll drive around it. What's the state under there?
It's cold, I'll tell you that. What
is the state under it? Is it Kentucky?
What is what?
The state under Ohio. Is it Kentucky?
Oh, child, please. I don't know.
Well, you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to find out. Go ahead. Ask the question. I can multitask.
Geography with Dylan Casey is back.
It's good. It's always fun. How many boroughs are in the state below? Also, we need to check the tape. Did you ask how many states are? What state is below Cleveland?
No, Ohio.
Okay, thank
you. Hey, I low-key dib. I'm in Ohio.
Oh, I didn't even hear Jesse say
it. I knew someone
said I was going to drive under.
Hey, I was right. Come on, man. I get something for that.
You don't get... What are you talking... What do you want?
That's a win. Actually, count it.
Oh, we're in the offseason. What are you talking about?
I'm getting
about?
Preseason wins. I want preseason wins.
Oh, you are desperate.
Count it. It is Kentucky.
You are
That's good
desperate.
Knowledge by me.
CFA wants to fight against that.
You are absolutely desperate right now. How about Derek Carr? There were a lot of people critical of Derek Carr's performance against the New Orleans Saints, and some people said, there he is. That's Derek Carr. Overreaction to say the real Derek Carr has arrived.
That's an overreaction. I wonder how many people watched, like, because I'm going to give more credit to the Eagles defense for that one than Derek Carr. I don't think he was, like, missing throws necessarily the entire time or anything like that. I feel like a lot of people just saw that interception at the end. It's like, yep, there's Derek Carr. But I don't think he was horrible the entire game.
I thought that game was about Philadelphia.
Yeah, I thought that was, like, a lot of defense right there. So I'd say it's an overreaction.
I say it's not an overreaction because...
Oh, Derek Carr hater. Somewhere well, Sarah Hodges is smiling.
Well, no. See how they jumped the gun? Because... When people say there's Derek Carr, I think Derek Carr is a good quarterback. He had a bad game, and he has
a rap though.
Yeah, but I'm not buying into the rap when I say it's not an overreaction. I'm like, there's Derek Carr. Yeah, he had a bad game, but Derek Carr's a good quarterback. Then Derek Carr isn't going. I don't believe Derek Carr is going to keep the Saints from being a good team. I think he's a better quarterback than people give him credit for.
I feel like more people have talked about how bad Jalen Hurts was in that game than Derek Carr. And Jalen's numbers, like, double his. But if you were watching, you went away with, like, oh, that was a tough game for Jalen.
The Saints ran the ball 26 times. So it's not like they were just airing it out. Or they ran it 26 times with Kamara, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so they were running the football a lot there.
I mean, as they should. Kamara scored 4,000 touchdowns the week prior.
Yeah, but I think it's an overreaction on Carr right now. If he's going to be the old Carr, it wasn't that week, I don't think.
The old Carr's not a bad ball player.
You know what they say when it's the old Carr. Like, he's going to lose you a game or whatever. He's going to show you why he's an average to barely above average quarterback, I guess.
Yeah.
Didn't we always equate Jimmy to Derek Carr?
Yeah, a lot of people thought he was better than Jimmy, and I think he is better.
I did think he was, a little but better they were always in the same tier, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Turns out that's not true.
No.
That's not true at
all. Derek definitely better than Jimmy. Jimmy had, man, yeah, a lot of people fooled. Well, maybe just me. Had me fooled.
He definitely had you fooled. How about this one? Since we got the Dallas Cowboys tonight, the Commanders are the best team in the NFC East.
You know, I have no problem disrespecting the Eagles, but I won't do that just yet. Just yet.
So you got the Eagles as the best team in the East.
Yeah, I got them by default.
Yeah, it's another reaction. I got the Eagles, too. I got my eyes on the Commanders, but the Eagles, they're still there.
Could it change this week?
No, it won't change until middle of the season.
Who do the Commanders have this week?
Commanders got a... I know the Commanders are... I think, is it the Cardinals?
The Cardinals, yeah, they got the Cardinals.
Yeah, I knew they had one I was interested in this
week. Eagles got the Bucks and yep. Tampa Bay. Commanders are in Arizona.
Yeah, it could change this week.
Okay.
Could change this week. If the Eagles lose and we keep saying the Commanders, we agreed to say football team. If the football team wins.
That'd be a quality win for Washington.
Back-to-back road wins as well. Yeah. Short week. So, yeah, it could change this week.
Or maybe we're wrong about Arizona. I'm not sure. But we'll to be determined. We'll see.
So I didn't catch this. Did anybody see what – this is random. Did anybody see in the Lions-Cardinals game where it looked like Jared Goff threw a pick six and they just said, no, that play didn't happen? Did anybody see that play?
I did not see it.
What the ruling was?
Blow the play dead, I'm assuming.
So they snapped the ball. And there's pressure on Goff or whatever, and he kind of loses the ball a little bit, and it's caught in the air, and the guy returns it for a pick six. And I had the sound down. That's why I don't know what happened. But they reviewed it.
The sound was up on your seven other TVs?
Oh, you know, Niners get the, no, get the I got call you. On that one. Yeah. And they said, no, the play didn't go. But it was
– Eaton says it was the two-minute warning.
So – there was some time, obviously, I guess they said they whistled dead, but they went through with the play a lot longer than when somebody whistled
well,
the play dead.
So I'll tell you, maybe they didn't whistle that. Maybe the idea was let's let the play out because we don't want to be wrong. If he snaps the ball at 2:01 and we blow the whistle and say it's the 2-minute warning, the play is dead. Mm-hmm. If he snaps the ball at 2 minutes, the play's dead and it doesn't count. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's the right way of doing it. You let the play out, go back and look like, hey, you snapped the ball too late. It's a 2-minute warning.
That's what they do with turnovers and all that.
Well, Tyler Jennings said they said the clock was out, but it had 1 second left. Sound like they got it wrong.
Okay, I don't have an explanation for that.
Ref's got it wrong. What's new?
There was five seconds on the clock, and there's no play clock went out.
I think we're jumping the – you talk about overreaction. We're saying the refs got it wrong.
There's no conspiracy there. It's just refs being refs.
I can't imagine.
But yeah, I couldn't because I was watching the game on the side TV, and I was like, oh snap, pick six, and then yeah, just side the Lions TV. Got the ball back on the same play. I said, well, what?
Where's the side TV? Like, where's this located? Like in your loft, your theater room?
It's in the loft, and there's.
I was just joking when I said loft, bro. I didn't even know you had a loft.
That's not even rich. It's a loft is a loft.
I don't necessarily know what a loft is. It's just some crazy room that's cool.
It's an open space. It's an open space.
That he has filled up with television.
It's an open space upstairs.
To do whatever he wants with. It's a very large area.
It could be a room. If you just put a wall there, it's a room. But
that's crazy. It's this massive room where you can just do whatever you want.
No, it's not a massive.
You have 8 TVs in. It's big enough to have 8 TVs.
I'm sorry. Do you think it's big enough to have a movie theater in?
Probably.
No, it's not.
Could you rent it out as a studio?
No.
Good question.
Could you?
You're projecting again.
I'm just asking a question.
Well, leave Dame alone. You're lashing out again, like yesterday. Leave him alone. We're talking about you right now.
You need therapy. You need someone to help you work through this without lashing out at other people. I don't understand.
I walk downtown. It's like, oh, yeah, we got lofts for sale and stuff like that. So I'm just trying to figure it out.
Oh, no, that's completely different.
Kenny just has one in his house.
Yeah, that's crazy.
No, that's completely different.
Wow.
Just having a loft in his house. That's wild. Wild, wild, wild.